Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. The film wearing pub is Angel Islington. I'm no fool. Please welcome a man who is probably the worst father in the world. It's the jury's out. It's Richard Herring.
You're lovely. Thank you very much. Welcome to another Edinburgh Fringe podcast. And thank you for keeping the audience nice and small here, so it's authentic to my fringe experience. We're at the Bill Murray Pub, fantastic comedy club in Angel. Do come and they do fantastic shows. And a workshop just before I came in. That's very exciting. Anyway, welcome to Richard Herring's LST podcast. It's today. It's the Lutheran School of Theology podcast. It's a slight change of direction. I've got a bit fed up with interviewing comedians and decided that I now believe in that the individual receives the gift of salvation through faith alone. Though faith is a gift of God, which means if you don't have it, he doesn't want you to have it and he doesn't want you to be saved, so fuck you all. That's basically the Lutheran school of theology, but we're going to be talking about that at length with our guest. Though I was talking to some cool kids wearing Heelys. Remember Heelys? Remember Heelys? You can go scoot around on your heel. Remember those? They call it Rallastapa. So it's getting harder to come up with those. Weirdly, given this week's guest, I would just on Thursday I was watching Gogglebox with my 8-year-old daughter. I don't think that was necessarily appropriate. And my wife was out doing a gig, and I've sometimes let my daughter stay up a bit late, and we were just watching it on, all four. And they started, a show came on where they were discussing the fact that men are buying the wrong size condoms, and then a man showed you how to measure your penis with a piece of string. I don't know if that was entirely appropriate. I don't know if that makes me a terrible father or whether the fact that I didn't try and explain to her what was going on made me a terrible father. she thought that the silly man on the TV was just trying to measure the height of a person, and she thought it was a ridiculous way to do it when you could just measure them with a tape measure. So we sort of got away with it, though she may be mentally scarred. But we don't know. So we are recording these at the Bill Murray and putting them out during the Fringe. You're very lucky people here today. I've given you several gifts worth more than your ticket price. Because I've got too much stuff in my garage and I'm just trying to get rid of it. So thank you to everyone who backed those Kickstarters and paid money for this stuff. But if you feel like on the way out there's a bucket there, you can make a small donation to Scope in return for those gifts if you wish. But I know no one has cash anymore. It's fine. You'll get away. Oh, I don't carry cash. So anyway, look, we're going to crack straight on because we've got a fabulous guest for you this week. He's probably best known, of course, for his appearance on Nevermind the Full Stops. That's fantastic, which I hope to talk to him about. I was on that as well, and I've mentioned it before. Will you please welcome the incredible Paul Sinner, ladies and gentlemen. Paul Sinner, here we come. I'm going to sit here, I think. Am I the right way around? Sit down, Paul. Welcome. I can't work out if I'm the right way round or not.
I have no idea.
I know, I don't know. I can't work out if I usually sit. I think I usually
sit. I don't know what your perspective is.
I usually sit this way around. It feels weird, but maybe it's just because I can touch Paul from this. Do you remember appearing on Nevermind the Full Stops?
I do. It was
Julian Fellowes.
Julian Fellowes, the Oscar-winning Julian Fellowes. It was a quiz about grammar.
Yeah.
And at the time...
Hold on, that's me.
It's the crickets come on in my pocket, which is like...
If you're not having sex with insects, that's quite an exciting thing.
I'll tell you what, I'll turn it off.
Sort of polite, isn't it? I just do that to show people, please turn off your mobile phone. tell us about Julian Fellowes.
He's a pompous man, for sure. but it seemed quite pleasant, and I was just really, at that stage, I'd not been on very many quizzes or game shows on the telly.
Yeah.
So I was just really excited to be on, and I was actually on against someone called Stuart Lee, who you may know, and the late David Nobbs and Patricia Hodge. And in the buzz around at the end, it was just me and Stuart buzzing, while Patricia Hodge and David Nobbs. Sat there going, "Who are these dicks?"
it was like a school test though, and I remember
he was very.
And at the end, we did retakes, and he said something about.
I think the irony being that although I'm meant to be a spectacular pedant, I've never actually given a flying fuck about grammar at any stage of my life.
No.
It really wasn't me.
Nor me neither. I did. He asked me a question and I just went, "Oh, fuck off." And it made the small audience laugh, but I didn't get invited back on Nevermind the Full Stops for some reason. I think it's because...
No one got invited back.
I don't think they did another series. So let's quickly, Tommy, not quickly, at some length, talk about your Edinburgh show, because that's what this is all about. What is this? Is this your... How many Edinburgh
12th,
shows?
Apparently. 12. I was reminded this morning. It's,
right.
12th, blimey. So it's called Paulie Bengali, which is almost a homage to the fact that last year's title was actually quite good.
Yes.
Last year's title was called One Sinner Lifetime.
Yeah.
And this was me stopping halfway through the process of trying to create a title as good as last year's and go, I can't do it. So I stopped at Paulie Bengali. And it's not about anything in particular. There was a story running through it. And I don't want to give too much away other than to say that the story is genuinely very, very interesting given the state of the entertainment industry and the state of British politics. But around the story is a lot of stand-up. Because what I'm trying to do now, especially at this stage of my career where I'm known as the guy who's got Parkinson's, I've been known as that for the last 4 years, I have no idea how long I'm going to be a stand-up for because I get more tired with every passing year. I just want to go up and do a show that I enjoy and is fun and is the show is less fun than I imagined it was going to be because at the end of the day, I'm a man with opinions and opinions have got to be made.
Yeah.
But one thing it's not about is pathos. This is not a show feeling sorry for yourself. This is not a show about, oh, woe is me, I'm slowing down. This is a show where I'm taking pot shots, fairly random pot shots at the industry, at the state of the industry, and particularly the state of British politics.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's the nice thing about getting older, I think, when you know, you get to a certain point in your career, you can just go, oh, fuck it.
Well,
don't do it to Julian Fellowes midway through your career.
Yeah. Well, Edinburgh, that's about the age of 30.
It is, yeah.
It's getting younger and younger every year. And I went to Edinburgh last year, and it's the first time I truly felt old where I look at comedians and go, you've just got so much boundless enthusiasm for the form.
Yeah.
And it's making me feel like a very bitter, wizened old creature. And good luck to them, because the future is the future, and that's the way that entertainment should be.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to do 3 shows a year in Edinburgh, and I did 10 days last year of one show, and it practically killed me. So
yes, you know, you made that very clear.
So, you know, so it's. I think it's all of us are slowing down in one way or another. So
I mean, the one thing I will say about my show, other than if you genuinely hate left-wing comedians, for crying out loud, stay away from my show and go see something more suitable for yourself. But it's got songs, and they're not they're not well sung.
Good.
But they're what I've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years, ever since the Parkinson's diagnosis. I did a gig, I can't remember where it was, and Vicky Stone, the now Olivia Award-winning songwriter, was doing a gig, and I liked her keyboard because it was light. And I've always wanted to be somebody who played a keyboard on stage. Right. I've always been put off by the fact that it seems like an unwieldy way to make a living. But her keyboard was so light, I thought, no, I'm going to fucking do this. So I started doing songs from then, and it's genuinely, to my shock and delight, it's been a success.
Good.
I did have my first review last year said his singing and his piano playing is terrible. And I thought to myself, I've got a neurological condition. Do you have a go at people in the Paralympics for not throwing a shot put for someone else? But the other reviews were amazing.
Yeah.
And you're always hit by your first review because that's the one that you think is going to set the tone for your fringe. And I was kind of depressed by my first review. And then I ended up being, under some weird algorithm, according to the British Comedy Guide, the second or third best reviewed show on the fringe. And I'm like, I didn't see that coming from the first review. No. So fuck him, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I was talking to the Alan Davis and Joe Crawford. I was doing a gig with them last night, and, you know, and they were saying, like, in the old days, The Guardian used to have a flat, and they would have all the reviewers would stay in the flat, and they would do, you know, 10 reviews a day. And now it's all freelance. So, the reviewers are often just a person, which is fine, but a person on the internet. So, you know, it's...
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, the reviewers are allowed to think whatever they like. We shouldn't get hung up on them. It was just the specifics of being told that I was a bad piano player and a bad singer. And it's like, yes, there are kind of reasons for that.
How long have you been playing? Have you always played the keyboards?
Well, teenage years, I was somebody that played the keyboard quite well, and then I had an ear for learning how to play songs. So, but once I was in medical school, I was the one that always would lead the drunken sing-along, you know, the usual American Pie, whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be in the piano room playing the piano while people sung along. And there was a night in 2004, Edinburgh Festival, the last night. Was on the piano all night at some... I think it might be Ned Byrne or something. It was a rich comedian's party, as defined by the fact there was a piano in the flat.
Wow.
It might have been Ed Byrne, I can't remember. I remember playing a sing-along for comedians for quite a while. So I used to be really good.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I mean, honestly now, I'm not a good pianist. I'm not a good singer. But that doesn't mean you can't get comedic ideas out.
Of course.
That's what I'm trying to do.
You're reviewing yourself badly now. Boy.
Yeah. Honestly.
But honestly, which is good. Well, I think that, you know, I think that's terrific. I think that's it's a great thing to branch out and try new things.
I think it's something you just got to do. I've done a lot of shows at the Edinburgh Festival, and they've all been fairly one note in the sense of delivery, and it's just been an hour of a person barking their views and their anecdotes and their stories, and deliberately and perhaps cynically mining for pathos and callbacks and, you know, the famous 40-minute bit of sadness and all of that. I've played that game. I can't be asked to play that game anymore. I just want to have fun and do try stuff that I'll, you know... Without wishing to sound bleak, my time is running out, but I hate the fact that people use it as a headline. Because I don't know what degree my time is running out. It could be 5 years, it could be 10 years for all I know. Mm-hmm. I just know that my time is running out, and I just want to throw enough shit at the wall to come out of it and go, I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah, good. But, you know, it's a good lesson for everyone, because all of our time is running out.
Well, indeed, yeah.
You know, like I had my experience a couple of years ago where I thought I was
of
a goner.
Of course, yeah.
And it sharpens your focus.
Yeah.
And I think if it sends you, you know, that sort of thought could send you crazy, and it could think, I've got to create a masterwork. I think if it sends you down, I'm going to try something that I would never have normally done. I think that's I moved to ventriloquism. That was my... Although, actually, I did that before I was ill, to be fair, so I've got no excuse. But, you know, it's fun to kind of explore a new area and see where it goes. And
I think it's important to end your career with no regrets.
Yeah. Apart from everyone in the audience.
Yeah. Put yourself up. But what struck me as genuinely unexpectedly amazing was the show went really... Last year was the big gamble.
Yeah.
They had the most number of songs, and it went well, and that's fine. But, you know, I've done it and it went well. If it doesn't go well this year, so be it. But at least I've had fun trying.
Yeah. And is it just that? I mean, you tour the shows presumably after Edinburgh? Or,
do you know what?
Or you're not going to?
Do you know what? It's hard work touring.
It really is.
Especially when you're a corporate whore like me who gets better paid award ceremony gigs all the time. It's really hard to go, do I do a gig for artistic reasons, or do a better paid gig for the oil industry? It's... Because people need to know who are the best oil company of the year.
They do. It's very important for the future so people can find out whose fault it is. You are the best at being an oil company and you destroyed the world. Then we can come and get them.
It's something I'm talking about with a degree of honesty this year, is that I've become, through my celebrity on The Chase, something of a go-to person for corporate award ceremonies.
Yeah, of course.
But especially if the previous year the host told a racist joke.
You must be getting a lot of work for.
Because suddenly I'm the all-time diversity magic bullet. And instantly salve a company of all its woes and all its guilt. I'm in there. The number of times I've been sat in a Zoom meeting and I've said, who have you had last year? And they've said, well, we can't really say because he used the N-word. And it's like, oh, God, and you're booking me now? I mean, you really have had a dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
Where you've decided to go in a different direction.
I mean, this...
I honestly wish I could name names. But
it's just unbelievable what anyone, like, you know, if it was 10 years ago, I mean, even if it was 10 years ago, but if anyone in this climate, it's sort of...
Well, exactly.
Would still be doing that. It's unbelievable.
And, of course, the oil industry is directly responsible for this climate. But
that's true. That's the end of your... That's it, they're over.
Just
now.
Up oil. But don't upset snooker fans. It's a difficult balance. It is a difficult balance.
And do you find your audience, you know, as the TV success, which has been, it's been a long-term thing now, the Chase.
It's been a long time, 12 years I've been on The Chase.
Yeah. Is it able to see whether that's affected your audience? Do people come not knowing what they're going to get?
It's really hard because when somebody doesn't laugh at a joke, you don't want to be arrogant enough to go, well, that's your fault.
Yeah.
Because it could be just a shit joke. And so it's hard to jump to conclusions as to why an audience might go one way or another. But I do think that the audience that only come to see me because they're expecting jokes about white suits and Bradley and this, that and the other is dwindling.
Right.
And that I'm filtering them out and they are coming to see a self-absorbed narcissistic wittering on about disease and sexuality. And my audience is becoming the audience are perfectly okay about watching narcissistic wittering on about disease and sexuality. It is moulding. But at the same time, there are bigger issues. And I think that more general and specific issues is the idea of normalising sexuality.
Yeah.
I think this is a process that's been going on in comedy for a long time now. And I think by being on mainstream TV and being really, really blunt and factual about it in live comedy, I do feel sometimes that I'm doing a decent job in normalising... There's one way of normalising, which is to not do any sex jokes and be the clean, lovable, don't scare the horses gay.
Yeah.
Or there's me. And that... an angry, bitter, sexual animal. And I like the fact that I'm normal and the fact that I'm married now to Oliver, who I do Celebrity Gogglebox with. It's been a massive normalising process for me as well, of going, I don't have to explain who I am anymore. Yeah. I don't have to have the introductory, oh, by the way, because people know. People who come to see me know.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and yeah, as I say, we're big fans of Gogglebox in our... family, went rightly or wrongly. I haven't introduced the 5-year-old to it yet, but it's a terrific show, and it is great the way you get a view into the lives of the regular people, but also the celebrity one sort of is fascinating.
Well, I think that what me and Oliver have proved more than anything else is that gay couples are not necessarily flamboyant or entertaining.
It's really nice to see a couple of absolute nerds on your TV. But it genuinely is, you know, the quiz thing comes up and you're both trying to come up with the answers to that.
Well, mysteriously, every week that we've recorded, there's been a quiz or game show on. Because you're kind of thinking, in a paranoid way, we're kind of thinking the producers go, there's got to be something they're good at.
Oh, no, I think it's because it's so interesting, you know, like it's interesting to see like famous people, but it's interesting to see who their friend is or who their. I mean, they've got the Liam Gallagher's son with the woman from All Saints.
It was clearly memorable in your eyes. Yeah.
But you know, like it's sort of really interesting just to see the kids of that marriage and see how much he looks like his dad, and, you know, and all those sort of things. So it, you know, and there's some very funny stuff in it.
I really like the Kemps. I mean, hand on heart, I think the relationship that Martin Kemp and Roman Kemp have with each other is really great to watch. They've clearly been bantering, for want of a better word, for a long, long time. Yes. And they know each other's points, if you like. I really like watching them.
Yeah, it's a good show. But I think what age do you think you should be to watch that show? How was the? What have I been a bad dad?
Well, you're meant to be a fashionable, trendy dad. So you should be proud of the fact that you've introduced your daughter to the idea of different condoms coming in different sizes.
I didn't know condom. I mean, it's a long time since I've had to use a condom due to my withered old penis.
Oh. That's no way to describe your wife.
I didn't. You can deal with her now. I'm not. That was him, not me. I didn't know they came in different sizes. The condoms.
Everybody comes in different sizes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But...
That's a pun on the word cum. That's the radical new fresh comedy that you can expect from.
Well, you might not come if it's too loose, I suppose, because it might put you off. So you know, if you've got one that's too big, they were never sized when I was only as a joke. You could buy like super sized condoms for a joke.
I say this with great love and respect. Yeah. Whatever you get up to and whatever I get up to has no interconnecting point. I'd like to think.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Let's ask. I want to ask you some emergency questions. I want to try and make sure I don't double up. It was 2019, I think, was the last time you were. You were on the show.
We were on
our last tour, which is we're about to tour the show again. Do come. RichardHoney.com/Rahelastapa. Thank you. Lots of. Well done. Surprised me. This is a question that AI came up with, but then I realised it is basically in one of the emergency question books, so AI just copied me.
Okay.
What is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love, Paul Sinha?
Wow.
Have you ever done anything... You know, you're quite a logical man. I can't... You're a romantic...
I'd be tempted to say this year's Edinburgh. I had a good run at Edinburgh last year, and I had enjoyed myself, and I've gone again because my husband loves Edinburgh.
Right.
And I've given him warning that I'm not going next year because it's the Olympics year, so I've got a ready-made excuse. I don't go in Olympics year. But going this year almost feels like an act of love because he absolutely adores Edinburgh. He's actually a sort of cult figure at Edinburgh. He literally sees more shows than any other human being in the free. I'm not even exaggerating here. He literally sees more shows. So everyone sees him around and goes, oh, yeah. This is an act of love. Getting married was a bizarre one because I never thought I'd ever get married. It hadn't occurred to me and it hadn't occurred to him. And trust me when I say you don't grow up gay in the 1980s thinking that one day you're going to destroy the hopes and dreams of your mum and dad by forcing them to watch a tacky same-sex marriage movie. So getting married was a mad act of love.
Given you didn't picture it, was it just you didn't picture it because you didn't think it could happen? Was it something you would have loved to have happened?
I couldn't be arsed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I would
pardon
be.
The pun. more of the fresh sexual pun comedy that you can expect from Paulie Bengali. I just couldn't be bothered. And then one Christmas, it just all... I mean, I was pissed, but it just all made sense when I was seeing him playing with my nephew and my niece and seeing how integrated he was in the family. I just thought, well, I might as well.
Yeah.
And I think part of the ambition was simply that I wanted to throw a party where I got to choose every song I played. Sometimes it's just as simple as that, but it just made sense. But if we weren't married, it would still make complete sense as well.
Yeah. the good thing about marriage is it just makes it difficult to get out of the relationship. Yeah. So you just sort of go, oh, well, I might as well, Karen. I mean, I think this is more my wife's point of view than mine. I'll just wait for him to die. That's the easy way out.
He said that many times. And I was steady on. That's a bit on point. Hides my medication.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, well, let's ask. I'll do it. That was good. I'll do you another. We don't have a proper. There's going to be an accident here. I can tell you that. It's a great venue there, Bill Murray, but my goodness. They don't have a small table. and I'm furious about it.
Can I take that off you? I might win Joke at a Fringe.
Yeah, give it a go. I don't think I've asked you this because this is quite a new one. If you could go into a chrysalis, like a caterpillar, and come out as anything you wanted to come out of, how would you emerge from it? It's a magic chrysalis that can transform you into... What would you like to be if you could change into a butterfly?
I was watching, I didn't think I had a bucket list.
Right.
But I was watching the Wimbledon men's singles final last week.
Yeah.
And the fact that so many famous people had a free seat at Wimbledon. But I think I'd like to come back as Brad Pitt's seat.
Okay. That is pretty good.
Try that joke for the first time. Seems to work. That might stay in the preview today.
I did get to when I dated Sally, the actress Sally Phillips.
Oh yes,
comedy. Her dad was a fantastic tennis player back in the 60s.
Oh, okay.
And so he's on the Wimbledon. I think he might even got to be the top guy at Wimbledon at one point. But we got for tickets to Wimbledon for the year, 2 years that I was going out with her, and that's still. And I finished with her. Imagine that. Imagine having free tickets to Wimbledon, going, I'm gonna end
you
it.
You clearly hate tennis.
I didn't. It was kind of fun. We went to see a couple of. I can't even remember who was playing, so I'm not that bothered. I was sitting. I've done this routine a lot, but I flirted with Princess Diana. That's how long ago it was, because she was sitting sort of where you're sitting there, so about 10 feet away from me. 5 feet away from him, and I pulled a face at
him. Did you say this to the French police?
I didn't. It was very close to... It was only. She only had a couple more years to live, so I wish I'd, given her one night of pleasure with my small condom. Small-sized condom.
Please edit that out. I'm still at heart an ITV man.
I've learnt from your appearance on Loose Women that you live. Talking of my ex-girlfriends, this not quite my ex-girlfriend. You live on the same street as Nadia Sawala.
Although the sister
of my ex-girlfriend.
Such is the nature of the street that it's still a good 10-minute walk, apparently, or 1-minute drive, which is how I know it.
Right.
Her dad, as you know, is a famous theatre.
Yeah.
Theatre impresario. Is it impresario?
I mean, yeah, he is. He's a fantastic actor as well. And but yeah, he does great theatre as well. Yeah.
And they live on the same road as us. And in between where we live and where they live is the point where Pickles found the world?
Oh, is it
the World Cup trophy?
That's even more. I didn't know that. Well, I spent a lot of time at that house, and in fact, Julia had a house next door to, I presume, the same house.
You've done well, haven't you?
Yeah, no, I've done very well.
Did they get you Wimbledon tickets?
They didn't get me. They got me. What did they get me? Anything good? No, I once went to an auction with Julia, and she sort of insisted I keep bidding on something. And so I ended up spending £6,000 on a painting that was, you know, like a little...
It wasn't called Salvatore Mundi, was it?
It wasn't, no.
Oh, that's a shame, because that's worth £250 million.
Yeah,
now.
I don't think it was worth... I mean, it might have been £3,000. It was a lot of money, and I had to pay it up. So, you know, that's not as good as going to
women. Women, eh?
Yeah. I've still got it on my wall, though, so I think of her every time I look at it. It was just a watercolour. It wasn't even proper paint. Apparently it's a big deal. It's probably, you know, probably be worth lots of money. Now, what I was also interested in, I saw a Chase question where you said that you had to say the colour of the one of the hats of the chicken or something in the right trousers. And you said you couldn't...
You mean the wrong trousers?
The wrong trousers, yeah. I was thinking the right trousers.
Always, so not, always working.
It's not as good. It's not as good a film, the right trousers. It just gets in the right trousers and they go home. That you can't remember, you can't visualise colours.
Yeah, I can't visualise colours. It's a real pain in the neck in quizzing because there's so many flag questions. What colour is this and what colour is that? I can see, I'm not colourblind in the things I see.
Yeah.
But when I'm trying to remember it, I can't remember what colour things are. So when they say what's on the what colours the flag, the stripes of the flag of Lithuania, I literally have no idea at all. Okay. But I can't remember what the flag of Lithuania looks like.
So can you? Because I've got aphantasia. It turns out that's something else I discovered during lockdown, which I can't form visual images of stuff at all.
Right. Yeah.
But so you can see black and white images, can't you, when you visualise, or can you not see anything at all?
It's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I can't visualise very much at all. One of the great excuses for my terrible performances on Taskmaster is I just can't visualise. I've never been an artistic person. I've never had even the slightest iota of pictorial skill at all. Nothing.
Well, me too, probably for the same reason, but I was kind of interested. But you can remember, if someone says the Lithuania flag is whatever it is, blue, green and yellow,
well, it's
then
not
you
that.
Just remember. How do you know? I'm going to tell you it is.
I can picture yellow, but I don't need other people to help me out with the other two. I can picture a yellow.
Right.
But is it red and blue?
That's a guess.
Don't don't start chipping in with you. We can all guess colours, madam. We can all have a fucking crack, can't we?
But I don't see colour.
No. That's quite interesting.
Especially if you're a comedy critic at Edinburgh. Yeah, that's very right, useful to have.
So. It's good. Well, you know, I thought you might be a fellow sufferer of aphantasia, but you're not.
I don't think it's quite as deep as that, but it's definitely colour is the big thing.
That's right. But apparently, yeah, some people just see a black and white image, so that must be you. But I would have thought I still know what colour things are. I can't picture it. But
I'll be honest. People say to me all the time, "You must be impossible to beat in a pub quiz," and I'm like, I'm very easy to beat in a pub quiz because I can't answer any of the picture rounds at all.
Right.
Although cynically, it's interesting that I can't recognise female celebrities. But if it's a bloke that I fancy, I could recognise him straight away. So there's clearly more to it than just aphantasia.
Yeah, just boredom of the women's faces, which is fair enough. Fair enough. They are boring. Boring. They're beautiful, but they're, you know, they're all roughly the same.
This is why Sally Phillips and Nadia Sawal are always in the same auditions.
It was Julian.
Oh, sorry. I didn't realise you'd know.
Talking of the Fringe, I wanted to ask you: Is there anything you always do when you're at the Fringe? Is there either a place you always go, or a restaurant, or something that you always do, or do you?
There's a lot of things I always do. I always go to Palmyra at 6 a.m. at least 5 times. There's a kebab shop on Nicholson Street called Palmyra that stays open unfeasibly late.
Right.
And there's... We don't get that in London, and it's just nice to do it. Dishoom, which is an Indian restaurant in St. Andrew's Square, does simply the best breakfasts in Edinburgh, full stop. And it's £20, but it's £20 fantastically well spent. Do other things I always do. Wonder where the reviewers are after 2 weeks. without fail. Have a moan about somebody I think is shit that's got a 5-star review somewhere. That's very much a rite of passage. Go, who the fuck are these people when they announce the nominations? It's different every year. And if I'm being honest, I do less every... 2018 was the first year that I went with Parkinson's, although I didn't know I had Parkinson's at the time.
Right.
And it was the first time that I felt tired during the run. It was the first time that I wasn't going to millions of shows left, right and centre. It was the first time I was choosing to stay in rather than go out. And it was great to get diagnosed since I knew what was going on and I could make further plans.
Yeah.
But I'm not the human being I was in 2017, which is the last time that I turned out to Edinburgh and lived it 110%.
Yeah.
And as someone who's been to the Edinburgh Festival a lot over the years, you'll know that it changes. I first went in 2001 as part of the Big Value Comedy Show. 25 nights, I got drunk 23 nights out of 25.
Yeah.
And didn't even feel a hangover the next... Didn't even feel anything remotely resembling a hangover the next day. Now, if I get drunk once, it's 3 days before I feel back to normal again.
Of course.
Age, the passing of the years, the expansion of the Edinburgh Fringe into something genuinely massive, whereas before you used to be able to meet the same people again and again and again and bump into them. Now you can have your best friend there. You don't see them for the entire month.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a massive thing, and you have to pace yourself. That's the way it is. But I think if there's one thing that I do every year is take friends to breakfast at Deschutes.
That's a nice idea. That's good. I think the constant thing for me is there's at least, in every one, I think, there's at least a couple of days and sometimes quite a lot longer than that where I'm just actually depressed, like properly miserable.
You're not doing it right.
Okay, I mean, good to know.
People say to me, why do you know you don't do a shorter run?
Yeah.
I want to suffer. I love the man. I don't feel you're truly part of the gang unless you're feeling depressed and you're suffering. And for me, a full run is part of the masochism of doing the Fringe. I want to do 20... It's a really weird thing, Edinburgh, because it's obviously too long. But anything less than that is not long enough. There's no correct answer to how long a Fringe Festival should be. And if I turned up and only did 2 weeks, I'd hate to leave. And so I choose the masochism option of being there every single day of the Fringe. That's how I do the Fringe. And if it's a failure, so be it.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, that it is a very mentally arduous month. And comedians are quite brittle and breakable. And yet everyone sort of still manages to get... I mean, I think there is a masochism element in it, probably, for everyone. They all basically get through it, it seems.
Yeah, you know, can you imagine getting through the arduous process of an hour's work every day?
It's not that. It's, you know, but it's because you're worried about ticket sales, you're worried about the money worried about other people getting better reviews, you're worried about other people getting a better career. So it's, you know, you're constantly in your, because you're in this little bubble of your own show, I think it's, there's a lot of pressure on there.
In all honesty, it does become all consuming and it's tough, but you've got to remember that although it is tough, it is an amazing city. It is an amazing festival. It is a genuine privilege to be there. And every person who's paid money to watch you do your thing, wanging on about whatever it is that you're interested in for an hour, these people fund your life and should be treasured as the people that took a chance on you. There are so many positives to the Edinburgh Festival that people forget about because of the negatives. The negatives won't ever go away. It's corrupt, it's badly run, it's too big, it's too expensive. The hotel... You know, I looked the other day to find out what... If I wanted to get a hotel room Wednesday, August the 16th, what the cheapest room I could get. £338 in an Ibis Styles hotel. None of the things that are wrong with the Edinburgh Festival will ever, ever improve. Nobody's got... Too many people are making money from it for it to ever get better. Once you accept that fact... Go in to try and make the best that you can of the festival. And I'm really, really lucky to have a husband who loves comedy. And therefore, for us, it's in many ways our big month away as husband and husband.
Yeah.
We're living the festival. If I was still single, I'm not sure I'd ever do it again.
It's a good place to meet people, though.
True.
If you are single, I mean, not for probably long-term relationships, though.
No.
But, you know, for 30 short-term relationships, it's very... It's pretty good.
I do recommend, if you're batting for my team, that Carlton Hill is a very good place for extremely short-term relations.
Well, I wish I'd known that before, because it's been Edinburgh's where I've been sad and lonely enough to to consider that. So,
you heard it here first.
just the touch.
Great
of
advert for the Edinburgh Festival. Edinburgh Festival, you could actually reverse your entire sexuality.
Not the entire one. Always been a bit in there.
so to speak.
A little bit in there. If we can talk about the Parkinson's briefly, I know we talked about it about last time, and I know you talk about it all the time. Is it annoying to have to talk about it all the time?
No, it's not annoying. In fact, I'd rather people knew about it.
Yeah.
But so, the number of times I've seen somebody make a random attack on me on Twitter that's gone, he never smiles. He seems so miserable. It's not my fault. I am not a miserable person. The muscles on my face are slowly tightening, and one day I'll never smile again. I want people to know that. I'm not a miserable person. I'm a happy person who still very much embraces and enjoys life. Yeah. It doesn't always show on my face, and that is not my fault.
No, good.
So I like to be a spokesperson and talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing, having gone through something again where you decide, is this going to be a public or a private thing? You know, so like when I had cancer, my wife was saying, well, think about it carefully if you're going to talk about it, because if you talk about it, it's out there, and then, you know, and then it's open season. Was there any point where you thought, I mean, probably wouldn't have been possible, right, to keep it for a while.
It was possible, but there's this voice in your head going, this is the one thing you've got over Ramesh Ranganathan. maximize what you've got. That's a joke, but the more cynical thing is I wanted to be part of the conversation, because then I'd be close. Then I'd be physically closer to new medications, new treatment, new research. So I wanted to be in the heart of that and not slink off into the distance.
Yeah.
So that was very much part of the idea of being a public spokesperson, is being part of the conversation.
And what is happening in terms of are there advances in the medication? Is there
There's no hope. there's no hope, but there are things that are in the pipeline that may slow things down. But I'm very much aware that I'm in the early stages of my, and I don't want to get in the way of people who are further along. So I'm in the early stages of my disease process, and I don't feel that I need to be thinking about revolutionary new treatments or new concepts. That's for when I decline.
Yeah.
Right now, I want those sort of processes and research and development to be available to people who are further down the line that need it a lot more than I do.
Right. Yeah, it's fair enough. But, you know, it is, I mean, like, that's why you're on Loose Women, wasn't it? Because you were talking about Parkinson's disease. So, you know, you end up getting a public platform because of who you are to talk about something that you know, I think needs talking about. People are fairly,
and you never know what can come of it now, because I've been on Loose Women, I've now been on Loose Men.
Right.
When I was on Loose Men, I was sat next to Tommy Fury, Tyson Fury's half-brother, the YouTube personality, Love Island star and boxing champion. And that was literally the most erotic 30 minutes of my life. Well, I didn't get that impression.
The
word unrequited is in the dictionary for a reason.
And the chase carries on. There's Beat the Chasers, which I've not been invited on. Now, I read a statistic that I was the equal highest scoring. If I'd known I was this close, I'd have answered a few more questions.
When it's by statistic, do you mean your diary?
No, I mean, I saw online, me and Jonathan Ross have answered the most questions.
You were very good on it.
Yeah, on the chase. But I haven't been invited on Beat the Chasers. So is that because the chasers are all scared of me?
I can say hand on heart, no. not only hand on heart, no, but we need clever celebrities.
Right.
You may or not know this, but they use Sean Williamson as the guy to bring on if they need someone to win.
Right.
Because he's that good at quizzing.
Yeah.
It's just, if you ask, I'm sure if you make yourself more noticeably available, and I'll let Helen, our producer, know.
Okay.
She's actually a very big fan of yours.
Is she? Well, no, I think I'd been on it by the time we last talked. I must have recorded it before lockdown anyway. Maybe it was, but it went out that Christmas, didn't it?
You were certainly smashing that buzzer. Yeah, you did really well.
Yeah, I really love it as a format. I think it's because, and to play it, I think it was genuinely, I was talking to Sarah Millican about this in which what will be a future podcast. You know, because every it's three different games really. So and so each one is very, and that decision about whether you're going to go for the big amount or the medium amount or the small amount is actually, it's really difficult.
Well, all I would say is don't go for the smaller amount. It's no. Celebrity Chase. There's literally no chance that the questions are going to come up, and you know so few of them that you're going to go out unless you take the smaller amount. That's the one thing I'd say. Take whatever makes you feel good, but don't obsess about it too much, because it's like all TV quiz shows, it's down to luck more than anything else. And that goes for us when we lose and when we win. It's just sometimes it's just mishearing a question or a question that you thought you knew or you didn't know, or you overthought.
Yeah.
Expected there to be a trick when there was no trick. So just go and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, it's difficult. I don't know if I would enjoy doing it again, because I did. But it's also a quiz where you can do that middle round like I did. I got £89,000. Now, luckily, we did win, but you could
89. Round of applause.
You could win that. We won £150,000 between three of us, so we all won £50,000 for our charity. Which is
and who got the most questions right?
I think it was me.
Yeah, good.
And I also left a lot for the football girl because I thought she'd get them right.
The football girl.
I can't remember her name. Last time I had Ben Walker at the back shouting it out for me, but I can't remember her name now, even though I did this in the future for people listening at home. So look out for that. You're going to enjoy that when it happens again. But I left them for her, the sports ones for her, and then she got loads of them wrong. So I could have, if I'd known I was in the frame to be the get the most right ever. But I did, that's kind of cruel to, you know, to you could get that huge amount of money and then just not win it. So you're sort of, you've got to do these three stages.
Don't obsess about it.
I obsess about everything. Is there more? Did you get invited on the other kind of quiz shows very much, or is it something that
I've done Celebrity Tipping Point and Celebrity Catchphrase.
Right.
But in general, I mean, that's because they're ITV shows.
Yeah.
In general, we're not allowed to take part in what we consider to be, consider to be rivals.
But then if I turned up at Tipping Point and you were one of the other contestants, I'd be pretty fucking annoyed that I was doing that. Because you won Tipping Point.
Which bit of don't obsess about it?
It's nice to win, though. You know, but also, you're right. It'd be nice if they gave you a bit more money to do them, but you win money for charity, so that's nice.
It's nice
to do that, isn't it? So you want to win? You want to win it?
Yeah, the charity thing is the big thing. It's not about that.
So when Celebrity Mastermind, which I don't obsess about at all.
No, I do read your blog.
they pay you the same regardless. I mean, they pay the charity the same regardless. In fact, you didn't get paid at all for doing Celebrity Mastermind.
No. And you still did it?
I did it. 2 weeks of fucking revising, fucking Rasputin, learning to phonetically say words that I couldn't, in a foreign language that I couldn't speak.
It's only one song.
Right, I'm gonna... The song is quite historically inaccurate, it turns out.
You're kidding me, aren't you?
To the Moscow chicks. He was such a lovely dear. Nope. Didn't even hardly went to Moscow. He did dance on the table in Moscow. I think that's where he did that. But still remember quite a lot of it. I learnt this, the street that Rasputin was born on, it had this like 500 syllable name, and I got it. I had to stop and then remember it phonetically. And then John Simpson, whoever it was, my memory's great. I'm going to be terrible at quiz shows now. I can't remember.
I think his name was John Humphreys.
John Humphreys said, "Oh, you could have just said the street of the pea sellers." Yeah, I could have just given the English name for it, which I didn't know, so I was quite annoyed. I'm not obsessing over it though. This is an AI question. This is more of a general knowledge question for you. What would happen if you put a cat in a washing machine and turned it on, Paul? That's the AI came up with that question. You'd probably lose your career as a
very much,
but as a quizzer.
But I've gained a big TikTok audience. So, every cloud.
Now, you're a big sports fan, I know. Mm-hmm. Were you sporty at all? I have a question about sports days at school.
It's terrible. In fact, sports days, athletics was the single sport that I had literally no talent at whatsoever.
Right.
I had a modicum of something at everything else, but athletics, no. I was born with crap lungs and poor vital capacity, but not so poor that I could call it an illness and make it glamorous.
Yeah.
I was just unfit as a kid.
But as was I, so I understand that.
I had puberty about 2 years earlier than everyone else. So it was 2 years when I had the illusion of being quite good at sport.
Right.
But after 2 years when everyone caught up, that was it for me. I was always all right at cricket.
Yeah, I was going to ask about
cricket. And I was a good pool/snooker player. I got a highest break of 32 on a full-size table.
Well, not bad.
Which is odd because I've got such little hand-eye coordination.
And you can't see colours. You can see. You can see him, you can't imagine. But if you had to sit in the mat, if you had to play blindfold, you'd be terrible, I reckon.
Yes. So I wasn't a sports, apart from athletics, I wasn't terrible at sport, but no. I was not good at sport either.
Right. But you're still, you're an avid viewer of sport.
Less so since the pandemic. There's definitely been a change since the pandemic. At this point, I'd like to say, anyone who didn't change after the pandemic, what's wrong with you? It was the biggest thing in our lives. The thing that changed after the pandemic was I had a bad one. I nearly died very early on. I lost a friend in the first couple of weeks. I had a bad pandemic. And afterwards, I just found it tiring to pour so much emotion into what other people that you don't know and will never meet are doing. Mm. That I became less of an obsessive sports fan and more of a sports follower.
Okay.
I didn't lose. Part of this comes from being a Liverpool Football Club fan. where whether they have a level of success or not, I kind of just stopped caring about. Because Liverpool last won the Champions League 2 days after I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I sat and watched the game and I couldn't bring myself to give a shit about any of it. And it taught me that some things in life are just more important. And so I love sport and I follow it, but it doesn't give me the highs of emotion that it used to.
Yeah.
And that's just because my friends and family do more than the behaviour of strangers. It's as simple as that.
Sure.
That said, come on, rain, stop in Old Trafford.
Well, they might be back playing now. I don't know if my phone had stayed on, we could have found out what happened. It's weird today. I stayed in Ealing last night, so I was doing a gig in Ealing, and there was just like, you know, one of those stickers on the floor saying keep maintaining the, you know, like this had stayed from the pandemic, was still stuck to the floor, yeah, as you walk down the street. And it was, I had a real kind of flashback, sort of PTSD kind of, like, oh God. So it's sort of weird. I think none of us have processed, even if nothing really terrible happened, I think none of us have really processed that kind of weird 2 years.
Along with 9/11, the oddest thing in our lives.
Yeah.
And it's hard to process.
Yeah. Hmm.
Sorry, I didn't say anything funny there.
Quite depressing. Are you a fan of cheese?
Well, I've got an opinion on cheese. Yeah. I absolutely love cheese. Yeah. There isn't a single cheese I don't like. But don't have it after dessert. You're already absolutely full. I'm a corporate shill, as I said. The number of times I'm staring at a plate of cheese going, I can't eat any of this. I'm absolutely full. If you're hungry enough to have a plate of cheese after three courses, that dinner has failed at every level because that's not been enough food.
Yeah.
So I like cheese in and of itself, okay, as opposed to as a plate at the end of a meal.
What's the worst cheese that you... Do you like all of them? Is there a cheese that... the question is, what's the worst cheese that you'd still be prepared to eat? But if you like all cheese, it's all...
I like all cheese, but I've never had Casumarsa, which is the one with the maggots from Sicily.
Oh, yeah. Would you be prepared to try
I couldn't do that.
Okay.
I can't even be in the same room as a maggot, let alone imbibe it.
Oh, really? Have you got a... they're not very nice. Is it just that, or is there...
Exactly it. They're not very nice. Yeah.
And they'd eat you if they got a chance, Paul. Just, I'm letting you know.
They're not going to get a chance.
They might do. Don't fall asleep with a maggot on you. That's all I'm saying. You'll have a go. Just, it's just advice. I haven't...
Usually nicked that off Confucius.
Usually in the Edinburgh Fringe podcast, my main advice is about women not putting lollipops, ice lollies in their vaginas. That's what happens every August, is there's news stories about That's because there's not much happens in the news, so every August there'll be at least one news story about women to put ice lollies in their vaginal passages.
Do you mean actually made of ice, or do Soleros and feasts and things like that?
I think, it's a good question. And I love a Solero, and, you know, I'm trying to work out whether that would improve or the Solero will make it worse.
This is very much your field of expertise.
Yeah, it is.
Well, you can stuff one up a man's bum and then eat it, and I'll stuff one up a lady's vagina and eat it, and we'll have a competition.
As I may have mentioned before, the Venn diagram of what you get up to and what I get up to has very little intersection.
I think
me and Ollie do not do that.
Okay, fair enough. But you don't put Solaris up each other's bottoms. What was the point of getting married?
I'd consider a mini milk.
I think Solera. I would say to women, a lot of women listen to this podcast, Paul. Whatever you've heard, I would say don't put any ice.
Taking notes.
Don't take any ice products inside yourself in that area. It's not right. It won't cool you down.
It's good we're serving a health purpose as well. Nice.
So I think I should put that in this podcast because it won't go in any of the others. and I mean, every year I fear a woman will do it and regret it. But I think talking about this much, there'll be at least a couple of women going, I'm going to give that a go. I want to find out why I'm not allowed to do it.
Have you any statistical evidence based on other podcasts and other advice you've given? This is what women listen to for lifestyle gurus.
I haven't. No. Only men really contact me. I can tell you that having talked about testicular cancer, about five men have gone to their doctor and discovered they've got testicular cancer. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. I suppose it's a good thing.
That's really quite straightforward. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing they've gone. But, you know, it was nice to live in ignorance, isn't it?
die in ignorance.
Because of me, they've had to have a testicle removed. So, you know, that's not a great obituary, is it? It's caused five men. They would have quite happily died with both testicles. Maybe it's too early in the afternoon for this level of stuff. I'll ask you a emergency question, then I'm going to ask you if you're up to anything else after Edinburgh. If you had to have sex with a TV or film snowman...
Many to choose from.
Which famous snowman or woman would you have sex with, and how would you guard against genital frostbite? It all links together. It's very carefully planned, this podcast. It all links together. It's mainly about frozen genitals. It's mainly what we're interested in.
Well, obviously Olaf is the only one I can name, and also it's Disney, so they'll allow it to happen. It's very much of Disney's brand these days.
If I asked you what colour is Olaf the Snowman, would you be able to tell me?
I think he's white.
He is white, yeah. Well done. So, you know, it's just...
Which is another big thing.
What colour is the snowman in the snowman?
He's also white.
Yeah. Quite racist, isn't it? The whole snowman. You don't see many Asian snowmen, do you?
You don't, and we're not going to go there. On the Japanese island of Hokkaido, you can find snowmen, but that's the most northern part of Asia I can think of other than Russia. Snow monkeys is Hokkaido. I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's good. We're both witchering. It's fine. This is part of the beauty of the Edinburgh Fringe version of this podcast.
And as regards frostbite, I got a lot of tips on protective condoms from a recent episode of Celebrity Gogglebox. Yeah.
Actually, Prince Harry got frostbite of the penis, didn't he?
I wasn't there.
He writes about it in his book.
I have no inside information.
I heard Alison Spittle talking about it. I'm going to ask her how to. She had he. I'll tell he you put something on it. He put some like.
I'll tell you who'll know.
Cosmetics on it.
Dan Wootton. Ask him.
Okay.
he's got a contact that knows Prince William and gives him all the information, so he'll know. So it's a nice chap.
Also, we could just listen to or buy the book, but you know, I'm not going to. What's coming up? What's coming up in after Edinburgh? Have you got plans?
Bloody hell, probably. I don't know. I'm going to Torremolinos for the World Quizzing Challenge in November. I'm at the age where people I know are celebrating 50th birthdays, and that's really, really annoying to lose a weekend, especially when you don't know them that well. And on that note, a friend of mine's getting married in September, and I've got no option but to turn up. I suppose the big one really is I'm hoping to go to Calcutta in February as a holiday with my husband, who's never been to India. And so I think that's the thing that I'm most excited about, because the frisson of excitement as to whether my dad's telling the truth when he says to me, "Oh, none of the family care about you being gay," will be an interesting thing to experience in reality. I shall blame my dad if we're chased out of the country with people with pitchforks.
Yeah.
But it's going to be really exciting. Because Calcutta is an amazing city, but not a classic holiday city. There aren't amazing sights to see, but there's a life and a vibrancy and a great food and a just genuine life that Ollie, my husband, will really, really love. So that's the thing that I'd really like to nail, is going to Calcutta in February.
Terrific. Good. Well, that's something to look forward to. Now, tell us where your Edinburgh show is on and what time it's on.
It's on at 5:40.
Nice.
And it's on at the Newtown Theatre, which Lovely. Is the Masonic Hall on George Street. Last year I did a 200-seater and they offered me the 400-seater main room. And even though I've got literally no hope whatsoever of selling 400 seats on any particular night, I decided, why not? Give it a go just once in your life. So yeah. I'm in a ludicrously large room every day from August 2nd, with one of those days off somewhere. Yeah. But every night.
Brilliant.
What I will say is, if you're thinking of when to get tickets because you're worried that it will sell out, it simply won't.
I don't know. I think that's a good time. Although it's become very much like an evening city, an evening festival. I think it's much harder to do the daytime. 5:40 is, people can finish work and then come and see you just about if they're within 10 minutes of the venue. But yeah, that's a sort of interesting time. But also equally, it's not too, there aren't, like, you know, 8 o'clock. Everything's on at 8 o'clock.
Indeed, but everything's on it doesn't really matter what time you choose now. There are a whole mountain of great shows that are on at exactly the same time as you. Yeah. I like 5:40 because afterwards I can get as drunk as I like and still have time to sober up the following day.
Yeah.
So I think 5:40 is a good time for me.
Cool. Well, buy tickets to see Paul. I'm guaranteed the songs I've heard are fantastic.
And there are genuine surprises and real random pot shots. But I don't want to give anything away.
Don't give it. Come and see the show. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up. The amazing Paul Sinner! Thank you very much for coming. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Paul Sinner. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to George, the incompetent sound man, and also, of course, Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, and also Kathleen McKeegan, and the Rahulastapa, rahulastapa.com website, and everyone at the Bill Murray Pub as well. Thank you for having us. This is the Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or richardhang.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.